Hi, everybody. Congressman Joe Kennedy. I've got a bunch of folks on the call, and we do have a number of speakers, and I will introduce everybody as we go through it. I want to acknowledge some of the advocates that are on the line. So appreciate everybody making the time. Folks, it's an exciting time, obviously, for me in the next couple of weeks to finally be in the majority and to be able to help dictate an agenda for Congress and put out an alternative narrative to some of the opportunities and challenges we are confronting as a country. And I hope and expect that one of the areas of primary focus for the 116th Congress is going to be on ensuring that every single American gets treated fairly, and a big piece of that is obviously around our LGBTQ community, particularly given the target that they have been labeled with by a Trump administration. While that target applies to multiple aspects of the LGBTQ community, no one has been targeted like the trans community has. We saw it from the very first days of this administration with a military ban that was sent out by tweet from the HHS, Health and Human Services, that has put forth a policy of literally erasing trans community by definition from existence. From Immigration and Customs Enforcement that detained a Roxana Hernandez, member of the trans community, and ultimately ended up dying while in United States custody. From, again, the first days of this administration and the guidance put forth by the Department of Education, rolling back some of the civil rights protections put in by the Obama administration for trans students. And judicial nominee after administrative nominee for administration nominee that have horrible and horrifying records when it comes to equality, equal rights, and trans rights. So the list, unfortunately, here goes on and on. I expect our advocates on the line that are going to get into a lot of that. I did want to speak specifically for a quick second about the consequences of some of these policies and what that means across our community. I have heard, we have seen, we have read about the bullying in schools that has been condoned by this administration, the effects of the discriminatory policies in housing and employment, increased rates and elevated rates of suicide and homelessness, and the 24 transgender people that have been shot or killed so far this year, and the particular danger for trans women of color. So there is a real urgency to address these concerns across our society. I expect that a new Democratic House will do so in short order, and no one has been better advocates and champions of these issues than the advocates we have on the phone today. So to start, I'm going to kick it over to Luke from NTCE to give some introductory comments as well. Luke, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Representative Kennedy. This is Luke with the National Center for Transgender Equality, and we really want to thank you for hosting us and our colleagues today and having this rich discussion on how to work together to improve the lives of transgender Americans in this country. We talked about how this last November, the country really saw a wave of grassroots support to send a new and more diverse generation to Congress as a clear message of opposition to this frankly reckless and lawless administration. I know that the millions of Americans, including the 1.4 million transgender adults and hundreds of thousands of transgender youth in this country who have been frightened by attacks on who we are, will really be relieved to finally have a check on a president who has been nothing short of hostile to our rights and liberties. Congressional leadership are finally act to defend our rights and our well-being and, frankly, our lives. I wanted to just mention a couple of things that we talked about in terms of what the administration has really done within days of taking office. Many of them have already been mentioned by Representative Kennedy, but we really wanted to highlight how the Department of Education really started this administration by ignoring the cries of transgender youth who are facing prejudice and bias in our education system and withdrawing life-saving guidance that was issued by the Obama administration to protect youth in schools. We also saw how this administration continues to undermine the Affordable Care Act and how HHS in particular is now aiming to roll back non-discrimination provisions that ensure that transgender people can have equitable and equal access to health care and insurance. This administration has been willing to go so far as how it has been reported by the New York Times as trying to completely erase transgender people's rights and dignity. So with this new leadership ready to take the gavel in the House and with a pro-equality majority who's not in a position to exercise oversight, we discussed how transgender people and what transgender people would like to know in terms of how this administration has justified these attacks. So how we would like to know what kind of legal arguments could possibly explain the way that this administration has used their ignorant attitudes to roll back policies that protect some of our most vulnerable children. We would like to know who and what special interests or hate groups have been pushing this administration to deny transgender people the right to learn, to labor, and to live in our communities. And we would like to see and ask Congress to see any and all briefings and memos or communications that really lay out this administration's plans and justifications for trying to erase our rights and our existence. These are questions that we have asked of administration officials like Health and Human Services, Office of Human Rights Director Roger Severino, and the Education Department Office of Civil Rights Director Ken Marcus. But we have been disappointed in their efforts to avoid and to dodge these questions. And we believe that the new Congress has really a unique opportunity to hold these and other officials responsible for their role in their cruel, dangerous, and volatile attacks against our community. So I'd like to really thank Representative Kennedy again for hosting this discussion, and I really look forward to continuing to engage with members and with our colleagues on how we can work together to move our country forward on these issues.
Luke, thank you very much. Next up is going to be Aaron Belkin from the Palm Center.
Thank you so much, Congressman Kennedy, for your leadership in advancing transgender rights. So my name is Aaron Belkin. I've been running the Palm Center for 20 years, working on LGBT military service. And I'd like to make just 3 points about the transgender military policy. So the top line point to make is that no matter what complexity the administration tries to enter into the conversation, the bottom line is that transgender military policy has been a success for 2.5 years. Inclusive policy has been a success. And we know that from all of the data and all of the research from the Chief of Staff of the Army, General Milley, from all of the other service chiefs, all of whom said that inclusive policy has worked. The senior enlisted personnel have said that inclusive policy worked, and the Palm Center actually put together a 3-page list of all the data points that we can forward to any of you showing that inclusive policy has been a success and that discrimination harms the military. The second of my 3 points is that if the Supreme Court, well, not even if the Supreme Court reinstates the ban, but in arguing before the courts, the administration has tried to pretend that the Mattis policy is not a ban. Oh, it's just an even-handed health regulation that applies to every service member. Oh, it allows transgender troops to serve. No, that's not true. The Mattis policy is a ban, period, full stop. It is a ban on transgender service. It is a ban on transgender people. It is don't ask, don't tell for transgender troops. And the administration is going to try as hard as they can to pretend otherwise, but the policy is a ban. If you're interested, the Palm Center has prepared an extensive legal memorandum explaining how and why the policy would operate as a ban. Finally, third, just to underscore that, and this is uncomfortable to say, but it's nonetheless based on evidence, that the administration has been lying about transgender troops from its inception. The Mattis report, a 44-page report, is based on a foundation of lies that have been discredited by the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, 6 former U.S. Surgeons General, and an extensive research report signed by 3 former military Surgeons General, all of whom have said that the military is not telling the truth about transgender service and that there is no evidence whatsoever to show that transgender service has failed, and all of the evidence points in the opposite direction. Thank you again.
Thank you very, very much. Sharon McGowan, you're up.
Thank you, Congressman Kennedy. This is Sharon McGowan. I am the Chief Strategy Officer and Legal Director with Lambda Legal, the nation's oldest and largest LGBT litigation organization. And we are committed to not only full formal equality, but lived equality for trans people and the larger LGBT community and everyone living with HIV. And one of the things we wanted to sort of really highlight and lift up today is an overarching existential threat to trans people posed by this administration by its attempt to truly weaponize religion as a tool of discrimination as opposed to sort of a concept that is built into our nation's fiber as a way for us to sort of celebrate our differences and cherish our diversity. Back in October of 2017, trans people experienced a real 1-2 punch from the Justice Department at the hands of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. On the one hand, he revoked the Department of Justice's position that the federal laws prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sex also provided comprehensive coverage for individuals who were transgender or who had experienced gender transition. But on that same day, he also issued a guidance document that was supposedly about sort of creating greater federal law protections for religious liberty. But what we have seen from this Justice Department memo and then emanating throughout the rest of the federal government is really an attempt to use the language of religious liberty or freedom of conscience as a way to carve out massive loopholes and authorize incredible amounts of discrimination, particularly against transgender individuals. And this is especially troubling at a time where, as Congressman Kennedy noted, transgender people are experiencing incredible amounts of violence, but also experiencing epic levels of discrimination in housing, employment, and in education. And all of these moves by the Justice Department that limit the ability to rely on non-discrimination protections only further marginalize trans people and make them vulnerable, not only to discrimination, but to the kind of violence that we were talking about earlier on this call. But again, it's not just the Justice Department, you know, who has decided to forego civil rights enforcement in favor of establishing a new division regarding religious liberty division. But we've seen it in other areas as well. In particular, we've seen the Department of Health and Human Services or attempt to create its own religious conscience division, whereby it would sort of basically eliminate the ability of individuals to be assured of fair treatment on the basis of their sexual orientation and gender identity by ensuring that people who have a moral objection to the existence of trans people to be able to opt out for providing the kinds of services that anyone should be able to have when they walk into a doctor's office or other kind of business. We've seen the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs within the Department of Labor, OFCCP, indicate that they are now going to be reexamining their enforcement program, which is designed to ensure that federal contracting dollars are not being used in a discriminatory way, and yet they are now sort of relying on this Justice Department memorandum as a way to sort of roll back those enforced efforts. All of these things, as I said, contribute to the put transgender people's lives at risk. It is extremely important that we all sort of use the tools that are available to us. Obviously, Lambda Legal is going to continue to do litigation to try and push back on these efforts to truly weaponize religious liberty. But we are very eager to work with the new Congress to make sure that there is adequate oversight and investigation to ensure that the individuals who are entrusted with ensuring equal services and equal treatment under the law are actually living up to that obligation. So whether it's the Department of Health and Human Services or the Department of Labor or the Department of Education, all of the individuals in those offices are obligated to ensure that transgender people are able to experience equal justice under law, and whether it takes litigation or advocacy or litigation or legislative action from this upcoming Congress, we use all of these tools to achieve full lived equality for trans people throughout the country. Thank you, Congressman Kennedy.
Sharon, thank you very, very much. Ian Thompson, you are up from the ACLU.
Thank you, Congressman Kennedy, and a special note of thanks to you for your very good work that you have done and continue to do as chair of the Transgender Equality Task Force in the House. I wanted to briefly touch on two things today, the first of which is what could soon be a kind of all-hands-on-deck moment involving the rights of trans people at the U.S. Supreme Court. The ACLU represents a woman named Amy Stevens. And Amy spent nearly 20 years, over three decades, working in funeral services, a career she discovered while studying to become a Baptist minister. She enjoyed knowing that she was helping people remember their loved ones at peace and receive positive feedback from her employer and coworkers. Amy has said that she knew as early as age 5 that she was a girl. By 2012, Amy made the decision to tell her coworkers that she is a woman. 2 weeks after she told her boss in 2013, Amy was fired from her job. This caused her and her wife Donna to suffer significant financial harm and left Amy without health insurance when her kidneys failed. To quote from Amy directly, this is her quote, "I had given almost 7 years of my life to the funeral home, offering countless families comfort when they needed it most. Being discarded so coldly was hard to understand." The extreme anti-LGBTQ Alliance Defending Freedom has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to consider whether it is sex discrimination under federal civil rights laws like Title VII to fire someone because the person is transgender. Now, this is very important to note. The idea that bans on sex discrimination cover trans people is not new, and it's not something that the Obama administration made up. State courts have ruled this way going back to the 1970s, and federal courts have done so since the 1990s. Today, many federal appeals courts agree that trans people are protected from discrimination under statutes barring sex discrimination, and a wide range of federal agencies have issued rulings or regulations protecting trans people through existing bans on sex discrimination. After Amy was fired from her job, the ACLU assisted her with the filing of a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. As I'm sure many know, the EEOC sued the funeral home for sex discrimination, and the ACLU joined the case to ensure that Amy's interests were protected as it moved forward. In March of this year, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that Amy was, in fact, unlawfully fired and that federal sex discrimination laws protect transgender people. This case has been on the Supreme Court's conference calendar now twice, and it's been moved both times. So we could potentially hear next in early January whether the court will grant cert and agree to hear this case. And as I said, if they do so, it will really kind of be an all-hands-on-deck moment for mobilizing to make sure that federal civil rights protections include transgender people. The other point that I wanted to make very quickly was that at the ACLU, the fight to end mass incarceration is one of our highest organizational priorities, and we know that the disproportionate involvement of trans people in the criminal legal system is fed by both cycles of discrimination and family rejection. And to give one just example here, in the area of bail, upon arrest, trans people are more likely to have bail set, but are actually less likely to be able to pay bail than cisgender people due to high rates of poverty and isolation from families of origin. So we really see, for example, ending cash bail as a critical step to securing basic dignity for some of the most vulnerable people in the trans community. So, I raise that issue to highlight the fact that, you know, even other issues such as in the criminal justice space that you might not immediately think of as having a direct connection to trans people, in fact, do. So we really need to kind of lift up those other areas as well. So thank you again, Congressman Kennedy, for pulling this call together.
Ian, thanks so much. David Stacey from HRC.
Thank you, Congressman, and thank you for your tremendous leadership around LGBTQ issues and particularly transgender issues in the House of Representatives. As you may know, the country right now has a patchwork of legal protections for LGBTQ people. We have states that have laws, states that don't have laws. We have federal protections that have, in some cases have been interpreted to include protections for LGBTQ people and transgender people specifically, and others where they have not. And we really need a comprehensive solution to that problem to clarify that federal law does protect people on the basis of their gender identity, as well as ensuring that those areas that are not currently protected by federal law, we add those protections. And the Equality Act is really the place and the bill that would do a tremendous amount to solve those problems. As you may know, the Equality Act includes protections on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity in the areas of housing, employment, credit, education, public spaces and services, federally funded programs, and jury service. These are all areas where federal law protects other protected classes in various ways, and this would include LGBTQ people for explicitly in those statutes. In addition, we raised the bar for everyone. The concept around the Equality Act is that everyone have the same protections under federal law, and so in the areas of public spaces and services and federally funded programs, the bill would add sex discrimination protections where they don't currently exist. In addition, the bill would expand the protection of public spaces and services, otherwise known as public accommodations, to include retail in particular, which is an area that federal law does not protect. Many state statutes that do have public accommodation statutes on the basis of race and other categories do protect, but on federal law, which does cover race, does not provide retail protection. And so when you think about racial profiling in a department store, for example, that currently is not prohibited by federal law, and this would provide a remedy. The Equality Act enjoys tremendous support across the Congress. All but two House Democrats currently are co-sponsors of the bill. There is also bipartisan support in the House for the bill. We are looking forward to Nancy Pelosi's commitment and on behalf of the Democratic caucus to move the bill to the floor when Democrats have the majority. We think that is an important step forward. the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, which was the first federal statute to protect LGBTQ people in any way. It took 14 separate floor votes between the House and Senate over a period of 12 years. This will be the first vote on the Equality Act. Certainly none of us want to see 14 separate floor votes to get the Equality Act into law, but it is absolutely a critical step on any civil rights bill to bring it to the floor, get a vote, and each time it will become easier and we will be able to build support for it. Finally, I would just add that there is a strong support among the business community for the Equality Act. The Business Coalition for the Equality Act has 132 major corporations as part of it right now, and that continues to grow by the day. These are Fortune 500 companies and other companies that are household names, such as American Airlines, Apple, Cargill, Dow Chemical, General Mills, Kellogg, Macy's, just to name a few. And so we think it's critically important to provide this basic protection, and a House vote in the next Congress will be an important milestone and step forward to providing these protections.
David, thank you very, very much. And Diego Sanchez.
Thank you so much, Congressman Kennedy, and thanks for the great work you do that extends all the way from the 4th District of Massachusetts to include our entire country. I'm the Director of Advocacy Policy and Partnerships for PFLAG National, which is the organization that works with families and allies and friends of LGBTQ people as well as we ourselves. As an openly transgender person, it is fascinating to see the families way beyond my own who now call PFLAG for help because they have younger than ever people in their family identifying as gender expansive, transgender, or genderqueer. Those calls are generally based in seeking help, not only in the regular support groups that PFLAG was founded about, but also the advocacy in communities, whether it's creating safety in schools or just being able to cross school, crosswalks outside of school safely. We were the first organization to include transgender inclusion in our policy priorities. We did it in 1998. And in our 400 chapters and 200,000 members in every zip code across our 50 states, plus D.C. and Puerto Rico, we see that youth and families alike are concerned about the harms that are attempted and some that are actually done by the current administration and actions that directly target transgender people. We only have to look as near as the Trevor Project, which is the organization that advocates most strongly on suicide prevention for LGBTQ youth, and know that before the incident at Pulse in Orlando, that day became the largest volume of phone calls, online reach outs, and also text requests, until the highest ever, which was after Election Day, the presidential Election Day. Families were fearful, and all the advocates that you featured on this call are part of the hope that we can have for the future, along with the work we can do with Congress. But families have fear that is based in reality, and we only have to look at the GLSEN 2017 National School Climate Survey and see that 98.5% of LGBTQ students heard the word gay, which is pretty common. It's a gay people are generally accepted, and that's still heard in a negative way in schools. 94% of LGBTQ students heard negative remarks about gender expression, and 87.4% of LGBTQ students heard negative remarks specifically about transgender people. 45.6% heard those trans opposing comments frequently or often. These are causes for concern, but there are all the legislation and the laws that people mentioned today are very, very important. I'll add, too, as an adopted immigrant, I want to add the Every Child Deserves a Family, of which PFLAG and Family Equality Council are co-chairs on the coalition for that. And that would allow transgender as well as LGBT children who are up for adoption or foster care not to be discriminated against. And the same is true for the parents who are trying to adopt and if they're LGBTQ. And we haven't mentioned HIV, but bills like Stop AIDS in Prison and Repeal HIV Discrimination Act are also important to the trans community, given our disproportionate experience of living with HIV. Thank you.
Diego, thank you very much, and thanks to all of the advocates for making the time to call in.